It's ad break time. The Beyond Solid Air podcast is proudly sponsored by Central Michigan University's Center for Learning through Games and Simulations. They've always got something amazing going on. They're currently working in collaboration with Ion Game Design to produce the curriculum guide for Cartini, From Darkness to Light. This is a design from Zenobia Award finalist Sharia Iwandini, and it's coming to Kickstarter at the end of May, so get ready. Rising Waters, published by CLGS, is currently in production, so be on the lookout for updates on that. And also, I just want to put in a quick plug for myself. If you enjoy my work, and especially this podcast, head on over to patreon.com/beyondsolitaire to show your support. I like to do even more work on games, history, and culture, and y'all are the ones who make it possible. For now, though, let's get on with the show. This is a special one. It's about Night Witches, my upcoming game with David Thompson. And I will tell you here, it's going to be published with Fort Circle Games. That's information that wasn't public at the time we recorded this episode. Hey, gamers, this is Liz Davidson from Beyond Solitaire, and I'm here with two very special guests, my board game buddies, David Thompson.
Hey, how are you?
Great, because y'all are here, and Mike Kelly, and this is Mike from the One Stop Co-op Shop. If y'all have not gone to the One Stop Co-op Shop, you need to go there right now. Why are you here and you've not heard
of it? I mean, finish the video or podcast first, don't go immediately.
Fair enough. So we're actually going to hand it off to Mike this time, because David and I want to talk about Night Witches, and we're going to make Mike come up with questions about it. So I can only do half the work for this podcast, and I just force the rest of it on my friends. So take it over, Mike.
Yes, you all heard it officially. Liz has now relinquished all control of the podcast. I'm now a double podcast holder. So, you know, triumph over here. This is what wargaming is all about. Command and conquer, baby. So Liz and David, thank you so much for being on my podcast to talk about your upcoming game, Night Witches. David, first question. I know you're also designing Witchcraft, which is like a card game. So why are you obsessed with witches, I guess, is my first question.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like this weird, fortune, misfortune. I don't know what's happened.
All right. So an actual question, though. I was not familiar with the theme until you all told me like what was kind of behind it. So who were the Night Witches and what's kind of like the historical background to this game?
Liz, you
yeah, tell you what, I'll start. And then you fill it in. Basically, the Night Witches are Soviet female pilots of World War II. They were one of three all-female units that flew different types of flying missions against the Germans. So this is specifically the Night Witches. They are like a harassment night bomber regiment. They flew at night. They had these kind of crappy little biplanes that couldn't do a whole lot and like were not as technologically advanced, but they were quiet. And they had, a pretty good stealth ability at night. And so they would just fly these sorties all night against the Germans along the Eastern Front. And so, we wanted to create a game that replicates flying those harassment missions. And so in this game, you know, you are kind of flying over unseen territory, uncovering it, and then trying to accomplish objectives while you do that. And this unit did really well. They were eventually promoted to a guard unit. So they were originally unit 588, right, David? And then they became guard unit 46?
46, that's right.
Yep. But David, you want to talk about some more context for that?
I think you did a great job. The only thing I would say to just give the people a sense of like the kind of stuff they were doing is they were deployed right on the front line. So to give you a sense of what we mean by that, how close we're talking, a single sortie, meaning like taking off, going, doing their thing and coming back to the airfield, would take like 30 minutes. So that gives you, and these are slow aircraft. So they were really, really close to the front line. And they would fly all night long. So it was possible if it was like a long night, like during the winter or whatever, they could fly, the same crew could fly as many as like 14 times in a single night. So they were taking off, going, like Liz said, these were harassment missions. They couldn't carry big, large bombs. So they were hitting what, are known as like soft targets, right? And then coming back, recovering, and just doing it over and over and over in a single night.
So what got you both kind of interested in this theme and this like historical moment? Because like David, especially for you, pretty much all of your games are about hopeless missions most of the time, like people who die. So you're saying they're successful in getting promoted. That seems totally off brand for you.
That would be my influence. I chose the most positive. No, I'm kidding.
Liz was like, I want to win once.
No, actually, Dave and I had a meeting about this game this morning and spent the entire time talking about how we could be meaner. So I actually think we're well aligned on that. No, I mean, I don't know how this got started. David and I had joked about making a game together, and then we quit joking and started seriously talking about making a game together. And this was one of the possible topics that we'd thrown around, and we thought about some other stuff, but this was the one that we just kind of kept coming back to. So we decided that we were going to do it like as like our very first conversation about this game with each other was actually on this podcast we recorded with Raina Pennington. Because we wanted to make it like a very open process and also one where we were really thinking intentionally about how we wanted to communicate about the game. And so this is the one that just worked that way.
So what kind of mechanically, like I, so for context, I just played a single game. So I've seen Night Witches in action, a prototype, but I have not played a lot. What games kind of influence you all? Like, were there any kind of, let's make it kind of like this and kind of like that. I want to have these mechanics. I want to borrow something from this game. Like, where were your kind of starter points for that?
Dave, you want to take point on this one? Okay, I'll start.
Yeah, you go ahead. You start.
Yeah, all right. So I'll start, you pick up. So I'll edit this out. Everyone know that David and I have very politely tried to make each other go first. So basically, we started first by talking about how complex we wanted the game to be. So we talked about our audience first. So we had a discussion about, you know, something that was more kind of resist level versus something that's more like a Pavlov's House versus something that's more like Thunderbolt Apache Leader, because that's my personal love of like airplane games and, well, helicopter games, but aerial combat games. So we first decided that we wanted the game to be very accessible. So we were looking for a tight rule set. And so like that was the very first priority. And then I thought, hey, well, since we don't necessarily know what's under us, we could make it like some kind of bag builder. And then we were talking about what kind of map it was. And then David showed up on Tabletop Simulator with a hex map a little later. And we decided that, that worked. And so we've just kind of really thought about how to keep it streamlined the whole way. And like that has guided every single decision, starting from we want this to be something that I could play with my mom up until now. What would you say, David?
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, I would say one thing that I'm really glad that Liz and I did is we didn't talk about the game from a gameplay perspective at all until we met with Raina. So, and we were very deliberate about this. We met with Raina. We had that discussion on her podcast. We did not talk about where is the quote unquote, where is the game going to be until after we met with her. Yeah. Then we met, you know, following that discussion, and we had a long conversation about after reading and meeting with her about, okay, where is our game really going to live? Because it could be, there could have been so many different games, right? You could have an entire resource management game about the whole recovery phase and managing the regiment, like at a much higher echelon. But we really felt that like, the easiest way to evoke the theme of the Night Witches was put the players in the Night Witches role. And then one interesting thing, and we don't talk about this much anymore, but when we first started out, I thought it was more, I thought the right place to start was like more, you're controlling more planes. And Liz was like, to her credit, was like, we have never really disagreed on the design, but Liz was pretty like adamant, like, I think we should start with like two planes. And that was a really, really good decision because it's just the right amount of like control and focus in the game. And it really lends itself well to being a solitaire or two-player co-op, which there's not a lot of games that do that, right? That's a fairly unusual player sort of choice or whatever. But yeah, every decision we've made throughout the design has been, how do we have this really sort of tight, accessible rule set that is, while it's a war game or war themed game or whatever you want to call it, definitely like my 12-year-old daughter can play.
Yeah. So when it comes to game influences, though, which was actually what you asked about, you can absolutely you can absolutely see that how much I like Thunderbolt Apache Leader in this game. I would say, you know, the kind of that feeling of propulsion and going from low to high and having, there's going to be some pop-up targets that show up, you know, there are little things, right, that you can see that I've played and love that game, but it's meant to be for somebody who's never, ever maybe going to touch a game like that, but could play this. You saw by stealth and seeing it when you played. I think that there's definitely something to that. You know, and we use resist as kind of like a point for how we wanted it to like feel in terms of complexity. I would also say that I just kind of wanted to make a bag builder because I'm tired of the only two solo bag builders that anybody talks about being Coffee Roaster and Warp's Edge.
Well, you also got Orleans with the expansion in there.
Yeah. Although this didn't turn out to be a bag builder in a traditional way.
It has bags and tokens are in it. I wouldn't call it a bag builder.
Yeah, I wouldn't. It was supposed to be, but it turned into its own thing, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, having, you know, outside looking and having played it, first of all, I think the rules, entire rules teach going into a lot of detail. And we were on like a slightly more, you know, like not the very first intro mission. Probably took like 5 minutes, maybe. So definitely the accessibility seems like you all achieved that pretty well. And yeah, as someone who's played both games a lot, it very much feels like Thunderbolt Apache Leader meets By Stealth and See, like kind of how, you know, how quick or slow do I push my movement from By Stealth and See, the whole like avoiding patrols and avoiding attacks. But then like the pilot management, the multiple like attacks, the popping up and popping down and like ranges and everything. I think it's great. I mean, I'm biased. I like both these people, but I legitimately think that was a really fun game from the one time we played. I did want to ask, this is what I kind of flubbed in my brain earlier. Do either of you know of whether the Night Witches have been featured as a scenario or a full game in any other ones? Or is this kind of the first time that's being tackled that you know of?
I don't think so. In terms of board games, I don't know of any Night Witches. I don't know of any game that, but certainly they're not the focus of any game.
Right.
I wonder,
there's always like some, you know, like Pavlov's House was like a scenario in in one of the other games or something, but.
Right. If it is, I don't know of it.
Right? Okay.
Cool. And here's the thing. It's a little bit of a difficult scenario to pull off in most any other game, unless you design the game around it, because they're not aerial combatants, right? Like they didn't even have guns on their aircraft. They can't defend themselves.
Yeah.
So like you can't really have them in an aerial combat game as a scenario, right? I mean, you really do have to craft the game around them if you want to feature them at all. So, it would be very challenging, I think, to have them as a scenario in a different game.
Yeah, there is a card, I think, in Undaunted Stalingrad, right?
There is. There's a Night Witch's card. Now, that's a little bit misleading. So that they were in the area. They were in the Stalingrad area. There's some debate about whether the 588 actually performed night bombing missions during the battles.
Y'all heard it here first. David Thompson hates history and doesn't actually want to be accurate.
Oh, God. All right. So I do want to mention, though, that so among board games, I think this is the first Night Witches board game. However, there are other Night Witches like media out there that we are aware of. And, you know, it's really cool, actually, because it's such a niche topic. It's like the people who know what Night Witches are know from one of these bits of media. So there is a graphic novel called The Night Witches. And there's also a song called Night Witches from Sabaton, which the people at GameCrafter wrote lyrics to, like on some of the packing paper when they sent us our prototype, which is extremely charming. And there's also a role-playing game by Jason Morningstar called Night Witches.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
But it's funny because like, if you look at, you know, it's almost like all these bits of media, I think, are going to end up linked more than you would expect down the line, just because there's so few things about Night Witches that like the things that there are all get kind of like put together. Whereas if you have a Battle of the Bulge game, no offense, David, but there's a lot of those.
Yes. Absolutely.
So there's definitely other media, but I think this is going to be the first board game to come out. I know that somebody else had mentioned that they had thought about designing one and got partway through a prototype at some point on Twitter as well, that it's going to be the first board game that's Night Witches that I can think of.
Blazing a creative trail. Well done. So I noticed in the game, there's a fair amount of randomness, a fair amount of luck. And of course, that's pretty common in, I would say, war games in general and historical games in general. So where would you rank your own games, like randomness quotient, you know, with like maybe the furthest right being, I don't know, the Hunted or Hunters series, where, you know, one of those games where you're just rolling on charts and seeing what happens, and the furthest left being chess or something completely like non-random completely.
Ooh, David, you want to take that one first?
Yeah, it's an interesting. Okay, so let's talk about, you know, everything in the game is sort of revealed from bags, right? And there's two bags in the game. There's one bag that has a bunch of tokens in it that are that's the bag you're populating the board with, right? And there's things like tokens that are night, there's really nothing that happens. There's tokens that are clouds that can be good or bad. There's tokens that are AAA guns or spotlights, etc. Now, over the course of an individual mission, you're going to wind up revealing almost all of those tokens, right? There'll be a handful of left in the bag. And so you will have seen them, but the combination in which the sequence where they come out and where they are placed has massive implications. And I think over the course of missions, I think the difficulty winds up kind of being leveled out. It's more about when you saw them and how you react to them and if you deal with them early, etc. So I don't think that really affects like randomness from a difficulty. I think it affects randomness from like your experience, right? Mm-hmm. So you can play the same mission multiple times and it will feel very different. Like when we were playing the scenario we just played with you, Mike, it was a convoy that was moving. And I've seen people play that mission where clouds appear in the space where the trucks are, which makes it very difficult to bomb, but you're relatively safe. Mm. And you compare that to something like a AAA gun being in that space, which makes it, you know, it's not hard to bomb the truck, but it's very dangerous, right? So I would think the bag that determines the composition of the board is highly uncertain, but the difficulty is relatively evened out. Then you have
because
the
success over the course
bag.
Of the game, you're going to have
everything
all your AAA early. At least you know that you'll have like a clearer time, kind of further along later.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Right. Exactly. Now the other bag is what we are currently calling the quote unquote success bag, even though it's the bag of mixed results, right? Fails, stress, and success. And so now that bag is much more uncertain because let's say in a single turn you might only pull three tokens out of a bag with 10 tokens. It could be anything, but the fact that you're pulling tokens out of a bag by its very nature means that it's going to push you towards a much more even distribution of success than dice roll, right? So I think that what we've tried to do is create a game with a lot of uncertainty, but not a lot of just total randomness, if that distinction makes sense.
I mean, it does to me. For both the games that are kind of my main comps right now, I would say it felt less random than either Thunderbolt Apache Leader or By Stealth and Sea. And for anyone listening, right. I don't view randomness as a positive or a negative. It's just part of the experience, and it's going to be based on your taste and your preferences. But yeah, felt so. Yeah, well, Liz, why don't you talk through like what's happening on a turn if I'm like dodging some AAA guns and also trying to bomb a truck? Like, how many times am I drawing from that token bag? Like, how does it actually work? I think people like understanding kind of the core mechanic of that success bag might help a little bit.
Yeah, and I wanted to pop anyway because so this is definitely no B17 Queen of the Skies or like let's roll off a chart. You have a lot more decision space, and so for me, I like my games to have a bit of uncertainty in them. But I also like to at least create a feeling that I can do something about my situation. And so I think that's what we're trying to create here, where you get surprises, but you do have some foreknowledge and some control that lets you make intelligent decisions as you go through your turn. So for example, there are two situations where you're going to use that draw bag on your turn. One is to evade fire from AAA. One is to bomb. So you do your evasion set first, and then if you've got any juice left in you, you can bomb. But you are pulling success, failure, and stress tokens, which maybe can be converted to success depending on, you know, what choices you make. You are pulling them from the bag, and you are not putting them back in the bag until the end of your turn. So you know the distribution of what's in there. So let's say that I am trying to evade AAA fire. I can pull, you know, if I have an ability to pull three tokens, I can pull three. You know, I get a success, I get a failure, I get a stress. I only need one success, like boom, I know we're good. But I'm going to keep pulling for every other gun that shoots at me, and I'm going to know what's left in that bag. And then when it's time to bomb, I'm like, okay, do I think I can reasonably pull enough successes to also bomb the target that I'm over? Or do I need to give this up and get out of the way for somebody else? You know, what is my right play here? And so the idea is that, yes, you don't know what's going to come out of the bag on the pull, but you know more the more things you pull out of the bag. Because if you're paying attention to its construction, then, you know, you can do some manipulative things. Like you can say, well, my pull ability is 3, but I'm going to pull 2 instead. I'm just going to risk it because I want to save something. I'd rather get injured here than, you know, not be able to bomb at the end of the turn. Mm. Or you can say, ooh, I better pull 3 for this one, but like, because I'm right on top of it, I need to get an extra success. But, you know, this one, I only need 1 success passes. So maybe I'll only pull 2 tokens here so that I can also bomb. So you're trying to really stretch what you have and hope for the best pulls, but you also get more information about what you should do per pull based on what's coming out of the bag.
See, I mean, y'all could have, you could have gone the Arkham Horror LCG route and put back those failure tokens after each pull and just continued to fail 50 times in a row. Everyone loves that. I mean, you're giving us like mitigation and predictability. That's terrible.
Yeah, although we also give you the ability to add more stress tokens. So we have a lovely thing where, failure tokens. So basically if you have a stress and you want to convert it, one of the options to do so is to add another failure token to the discard pile. So you can keep, you know, you can make it now, but your odds of pulling a failure just went up later in the sortie.
Yeah, and Liz kept on doing that on her turn, and it only affected my turn because I was after her. So that was great.
You deserved it.
But, well, and the other thing that we should just briefly talk about is the fact that you have a lot of control about the situation you put yourself in. So you can do things like hiding in a cloud, knowing that you can dodge, you know, AAA guns, or change in between low and high altitude so that I'm lower altitude so fewer AAA guns can shoot at me. Or being at low altitude so I can, you know, be more effective at bombing. So we give you a lot of control. It's this weird combination of like kind of like a puzzle game in a way, right? Like and there's also an organic evolution to the board because you're going to be flying typically what we call sorties, right? So multiple flights over the board each mission. And so oftentimes players will spend the first sortie scouting out the board. Right, and having kind of a path that you've developed, and you follow it the next time, knowing more about the board and taking advantage of that. And then the other thing that we didn't talk about at all, Mike, we didn't really show you, are the upgrade cards. And almost all of those upgrade cards offer you some ability to mitigate.
Yes.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, we did have a meeting this morning where we took all the really good ones out because we wanted you to have to keep reasoning and puzzling as opposed to like avoiding any of that. So we had some really nice upgrade cards that were like too nice. And so now they're gone.
All right. Taking away the fun. I see how it is. So that kind of gets into, I saw a bit of the campaign mode for the game where it looks like it is kind of an organic changing, like difficulty setting. Success leads to harder missions in the future. Failure means it takes a little easier on you in the future. How many scenarios are there? Like how these upgrade cards work? I guess not in too much detail, but just kind of like give us a picture of the sort of structure of the campaign overall.
Liz, you want?
Yeah,
I'll take care of you too.
I'll grab it. And you can fill in. So we are planning for 10 scenarios. So the idea is that yes, there's a campaign, but it's short. And because of the point thresholds, then you have the opportunity to just open up a scenario, choose a level, spec your plane out and go. So that, you know, you can kind of play it either just, I want to take out a scenario and play my favorite, or I want to play through a campaign, but it's not going to take me 5 million years to do the campaign. Like, honestly, you can crunch through a bunch of missions in like an hour to an hour and a half, if you know what you're doing. So it's meant to be 10 scenarios, at least right now. And, what we're doing is basically based on the number of victory points you get in a scenario, you go into the next one and you have a different bag composition. So there might be more AAA, more spotlights, more unpleasant things, in a veteran level. Whereas if you're playing novice level, cause you had a rough time, it's more spotlights, it's more nighttime, more clouds, like things to kind of give you a little bit of a break. But there's also fewer point opportunities there because there's less to bomb. So the idea is that as you progress, you are going to be able to use the points that you've earned to pick up. You have to spend them for repairs. So if you damage yourself, but also you can get cards that give you special like abilities. Like maybe you can see an extra space ahead, or you can move extra, or you can change your altitude in the middle of a turn so that you can travel a lot and then suddenly drop and bomb, but you don't get a whole lot of those abilities. You just get to do it in a good moment. You hang on. And so the idea is to give people like things to do. And then halfway through the campaign, we are going to, so basically at one point the Night Witch's planes got upgraded. They were still the same dinky little planes, but they got more bombs and they got more fuel. So halfway through, you flip the board and you have more bombing ability. You have more fuel. But also we made the board bigger. So, you know, what we give, when we give, we take. So, you know, we've tried to make a good variation on the missions, but we've also tried to really stick to a good core rule set that works every time. And so I think that's kind of the dance we're doing right now. What would you say about that, David?
No, I think that's absolutely right. And of course, like, you know, what's awesome about history is it leads to these organic evolutions anyway, right? So because the Night Witches were so effective and flew so many sorties and pissed the Germans off, the Germans responded to them accordingly. And so what we have nice things, you know, the Germans are going to be able to reconstitute their AAA guns. They will actually introduce interceptors, which they did in real life, right? They were tired of getting bombed, so they brought German, you know, fighter aircraft to them. So those are the kinds of things that we get to introduce in the game to instill some excitement and fun.
Yeah, I was going to ask, at some point, do enemy planes start attacking you? I'm not even sure how that would work.
Yes.
That sounds terrifying. Yes. With the game I just played, like, how the heck do you even survive?
So the best defense, the only defense the Night Witches had going for them were they were so slow that it's hard for the German aircraft to slow down to their speed. So when your best defense is that you're really, really, really slow, things are bad, right?
That's awesome.
So what's
what's the plan? So, like, you all have a publisher for it potentially? I mean, I don't know if you're able to talk about that kind of stuff yet. Like, how far along in the process would you say you are?
The game is spoken for, a contract is not signed. Would that be about fair, David?
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah. 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 And as far as like how far along, so, you know, the core rules aren't going to change at this point, right? Like the core play patterns and gameplay and stuff like that. We're very much in the phase of tweaking things like individual point values and a couple of things, costs for upgrade cards. And then we've designed the first five scenarios. We've sketched out the last five, like we know the concepts. So it's now transitioning to sort of like late design and beginning of kind of development. After that, we'll do all the cool thing about the game is it lends itself really, really well to data-driven playtesting, right? Mm. So there's not a lot of subjectivity in it. We need stats like how many points did you score, et cetera, et cetera. And this game does a really good job of lending itself well to that. So, and because it's so super short and it's solo, designed for solo, we'll be able to get a ton of really good playtest data. So I'm excited about that. But I think, you know, we have a few more months of like design work based on the pace we're going now before we can transition it.
Yeah. Although, so and the other thing is like, knock on wood, right? I'm just waiting for us to have a disaster, but we haven't yet. Like everybody talks about like when you design a game, right? It's going to, you're going to have this phase where you hate it or where something's not working. And like thus far that has not occurred. And so I've been joking with David that like, this is like how parents get tricked into having a second child, that like we're having an easy time with this game. And so I'm like, oh yeah, game design's so fun. This is going great. Like I'm just full of ideas. I know what to do about this. We had a great meeting. You know, we're not disagreeing at all. And then, you know, my Night Witches would never act out in a restaurant. And I feel like we're just kind of like, I'm like, where is the shoe going to drop? Like, but so far we've had a blessed process here.
So when I don't get invited to the next season of Beyond Solitaire, people will know why. We've had a falling out and Night Witches won't come out.
I mean, I anticipate it's going to be when you add in the enemy planes. That sounds like the biggest shakeup to the like formula of the game. Have you play tested any like scenarios with that yet, or is it all conceptual so far?
It's all conceptual. It's coming up. It's two scenarios. It's like, I think scenario seven is when we sketched it out to be introduced. So we'll see. We'll make it work. Nothing stopped us.
Yes. I believe in us. I believe in our little canvas wings and slow speed as a primary method defense.
All right. Liz first, what are you doing for fun lately? What's something non-Nightwitch related that you're into at the moment?
So I'm actually almost, I'm really overloaded right now. It's the end of the school year and everything's crazy, but I'm also, I'm trying to get stuff done for my own channel. So I really need to get the Cuba Libre tutorial out. I really want to. I'm playing Twilight Struggle Red Sea right now. That's fun. I'm playing Taylor Schiss's Stonewall Uprising, which I had already played before, but I'm like getting serious about review plays right now. And this week, the Great Disruptor, but I'm not complaining. Chip Theory sent me Unbreakable because I need to do the Gearlock guides for it. So I'm about to take a break and like just do Gearlock stuff for a long time. It's going to be big. So I am busy, busy, busy.
Yeah, David, how about you?
So trying to get in as many plays as I can of my favorite game of the year, Land and Freedom by Alex Knight. It's fantastic. Also, I have not played it solo, but Liz, I know that you like it solo, but love it three-player multiplayer.
Oh, yeah. You got to have that. Yeah. You got to get mad at someone like David.
Yeah. Yeah. the game that's been the huge hit for my family for this year, I've probably played it 50, 60, 70 times, is Rumble Nation. So it's a few years old. Kind of hard to get. So I apologize to people if I want to go out and get it, but it's amazing. Today, I'm going to go play Littoral Commander at the Capstone Games retail store in Cincinnati. So that'll be awesome. Sebastian Bay, Littoral Commander. And when I'm there at the Capstone Games store, so it's Capstone's retail store, but they sell like everything, right? They've got all of season two of Final Girl waiting.
Oh, wow.
And my daughter's going with me. She doesn't know that. So that's her favorite game.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
You know, thinking for me, I'm finishing up. I need to test it for balance a couple more times. Unofficial solo variant for Wonderlands War. I don't know if either of you have played that, but that's a really fun one. That is a bag builder. There you go. That's a bag building game. But it's not solo unless the solo works out. And then, I don't know. Yeah, just finishing up the school year like you, Liz. It's just crazy. But almost there. Almost there.
So I'll put you on the spot, Mike. When are you going to come up with the solo variant for Undaunted Stalin?
My buddy owns it and I don't, so I've only played the first scenario. I loved it. I haven't really put my brain to it at all. I mean,
every time somebody asks for a solo version of Stalingrad, I'm like, ask Michael Kelly. He could do it.
I mean, I've only played one scenario, so I don't appreciate yet what a daunting task I'm sure it would be, because I know like you have all kinds of, I mean, in a way, it is funny you say that, because in a way, I think, so for those who don't know, I did an unofficial solo variant for Normandy, Undaunted Normandy, I think before the official solo was even announced. I didn't know it was even coming when I made mine.
Yeah,
I do in a way, you know, not to toot my own horn, I do in a way think that some version of my solo mode would actually work better, because mine, for better or worse, was it was divorced from the specific scenarios. It was just generic rules that theoretically could apply to every scenario, which of course means that it won't apply as well to some scenarios as others, but it would mean theoretically maybe that it could work better for something like Stalingrad, where you don't know the unit composition and you might have a sniper and not have a sniper. My rules might fit that better than the official solo rules, which were very, like, you need this set of cards for this scenario. Like, it was kind of, which, you know, to be fair, I think theirs works better on a scenario-to-scenario level because they did that.
Yeah.
But yeah, at some point. Yeah, because I don't think I have another one I was going to do after Wonderlands War. This was, like, the current project that has finished updating my Exceed fighting game solo mode. So maybe I gotta borrow it from my buddy, get his copy and dig into it, because I want to play it more. Like, the first scenario was so much fun. I was like reading what I unlocked, because, you know, like, I won or I lost, I was like, ooh. So I was really hyped about it. But yes, at some point maybe we'll see. All right, awesome. We'll call that it. So thank you so much for being at the Beyond Mike Solitaire channel. Go check out Liz's YouTube channel if you're not already there watching this as a video, or check out the podcast if you are watching this as a video. Go check out David Thompson's other games, like the amazing Valiant Defender series, or Resist, the upcoming Witchcraft with an exclamation point. Check out One Stop Co-op Shop if you're really bored. And yeah, there you go. Thanks, everybody.
Yes, and I'll just pop in. Y'all, I want to thank you so much. I know we're all blindingly busy. I'm so glad that you came on to spend some time with me just goofing around. It's like one of my favorite things that we do. And yeah, those of you out there, like, subscribe, comment, ask questions. Most of all, happy gaming.